Case number 12-5366, Adirondack Medical Center et al., appellant, Corning Hospital et al. Versus Kathleen Sebelius in her official capacity as Secretary of the United States Department of Health and Human Services. Mr. Baker for the appellants, Ms. Wright for the appellee.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. In 2008 and 2009, the Center for Medicare Services implemented new diagnosis codes for Medicare payments paid to two different sets of hospitals under Section 1395 WWD. I'm going to refer to that as subsection D. These are hospitals paid according to the standardized amount, representing the overwhelming majority of hospitals, and hospitals paid according to the hospital-specific rate as a group of rural hospitals, which is this much smaller subset.
So your argument is that we ought to stop at Chevron step one, and you ought to prevail. But if we take a Chevron approach, what do we do with the other provisions? What theory of yours do we have to adopt? In other words, you've cited a lot of different canons to get over the general authority that the Secretary has.
Well, Your Honor, the issue here is the conflict between Section D5, that the Secretary's exercise of general authority under subsection D5, and the specific requirement of subsection D3.
So the district court, I realize we're de novo, but found no conflict, that Congress had addressed a specific issue and didn't say anything about the Secretary's general authority.
Well, that's right. Well, the district court erred, Your Honor, because the district court concluded that there was no conflict between the exercise of authority under the two provisions. The district court said, well, the adjustment under subsection D3 didn't affect the adjustment under subsection, or more, let me reverse that. The district court said that the adjustment under subsection D5 did not affect the adjustment under D3, but of course it did. The government even boasts in its brief that that adjustment had the effect of sparing the hospitals paid under the standardized amount from a massive cost shift. That is an admission, in fact, that there was a correlative reduction in the adjustment under subsection D3 that resulted from the adjustment under subsection D5.
In your view, the only option the Secretary had was to go back to Congress and say that in light of sub 3, the greater effect that it's had on all hospitals requires a further adjustment, and I need specific authority to do that in light of sub 3?
No, Your Honor, not at all. Congress has already spoken to this very precisely. Congress spoke to this precisely.
But the Secretary saw a problem, all right? That if you take the language to read it the way you want to, it has a larger effect that the Secretary concluded was not consistent with Congress's overarching goal in this area. I just want to understand, you think the Secretary had no power to do anything except to ask Congress for either an amendment to sub 3 or a reaffirmation of her sub 5 authority?
That's correct, Your Honor. Under the law as it stands now, Section D3 is absolutely unambiguous. Section D3 requires that the adjustment to the standardized amount eliminate the effect of coding changes on aggregate payments under this subsection. And it is not in dispute that aggregate payments under this subsection refers to both sets of payments here. It refers to payments made according.
Yeah.
Why do you think Congress would have created this asymmetry? Both sets of hospitals in the calculation of the estimated overpayment, but only one set of hospitals in the corrective measure?
Your Honor, it's for a couple of different reasons. First of all, we know that Congress treats these rural hospitals differently. They're, in effect, a preferred class because they face economic challenges that hospitals paid according to the standardized amount don't pay. But Congress understood very clearly here that there were going to be overpayments to both sets of hospitals from this change in coding, and it unambiguously required that those overpayments be eliminated by the adjustments to the payments to the hospitals paid according to the standardized amount. And that is consistent with the policy of giving an economic preference, if you will, to the rural hospitals.
You're arguing, you have to be arguing Congress wanted to give an additional economic preference on top of the ones they already received.
Well, you know, it's not merely an additional economic preference. It's a matter of spreading the risk, if you will. We've pointed out in our reply brief that the economic impact, if you will, on the hospitals paid according to the standardized amount by this shift is less than 1%. So you're spreading out this effect over a large pool of hospitals.
I'm sorry, 1%?
It's less than a 1% reduction in the payment to hospitals paid according to the hospital-specific rate. So when you shift these costs to a larger group of hospitals, the net reduction in payments to them is less than 1%.
According to 1% of what they're paid in the aggregate over the course of a year of reimbursement, or what?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. So it's the net effect is when it's
zero reduction in the hospital-specific rate.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. And so the purpose here was to spread this out. And these hospitals, again, are financially vulnerable. So to the extent, and so the cost shift here or the financial impact would be much greater on these individual hospitals if Congress, in fact, had allowed what the Secretary tried to do. But, Your Honor,
you have said
you
that
records for me that about that, the proportional impact greater for the,
what's
called, the rural
hospitals? Yes, Your Honor, because it's just a mathematical, in terms of the dollar, the...
I understand that they're small and smaller in number, so that there's more dollar value involved with the regular federal rate, but I haven't heard numbers from you supporting the proposition that the percentage impact on the rural hospitals is greater than the percentage impact on the others.
Well, it's just a matter of spreading it out among fewer hospitals, that is, Your Honor. But there's been a reduction in, I mean, applied across the board to all of the, that is, to a standardized amount of hospitals. But ultimately, this is a policy decision, rightly or wrongly, that Congress has made. And this, and the language of the statute, again, is unambiguous. We are in Chevron 1 because the statute says, subsection D3A6, that the Secretary shall eliminate the effect of aggregate payments under this subsection. That is, we eliminate the effect of the overpayments on aggregate payments under this subsection.
All right,
the government has no... Your Honor, I say I'm into my rebuttal time, so I'd like to...
You have said a couple of times, several times, that the statute is absolutely unambiguous, and for you to prevail at Chevron Step 1, it has to be unambiguous. But doesn't the very fact that you're relying on interpretive canons suggest that it's not unambiguous?
Not at all, Your Honor. Halverson, which we cite, and this court used the canon, the general specific canon in the Halverson case, to find that a statute was unambiguous under Chevron Step 1. So in the Halverson case is directly analogous to this case, where the court applied the specific general canon to find that the statute was unambiguous for purposes of Chevron Step 1. I see that I'm out of time, and I'd like to reserve the balance for my rebuttal. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Good morning. Abby Wright on behalf of the Secretary. The parties agree that the Secretary has broad authority under subsection D5I1 to impose the adjustments to the hospital-specific rates that she imposed in this case. That provision of the Social Security Act says that the Secretary may provide by regulation for such other exceptions and adjustments as the Secretary deems appropriate. In this case, the Secretary deemed it appropriate to adjust the hospital-specific rates as well as the federal.
I don't understand your first sentence.
I'm sorry. I think plaintiffs clearly think
that sub 3 trumps sub 5.
That's correct, Your Honor. And my point was just that they have not argued that the Secretary didn't deem it appropriate or that it's not, in fact, appropriate. They've argued that D3A6 retracts some of that more general authority.
Well, their position, as I understand it, is that the Secretary has acted contrary to the clear will of Congress. So that's a statement. Her action is inappropriate, isn't it?
My only point, Your Honor, and I will abandon it quickly, is that the broad language of D5I1 covers what the Secretary did in this case. The question is whether another provision of the Social Security Act retracts that authority. And we submit that it does not. It is not clear. The plaintiffs, as Judge Brown noted, have to show that their reading is compelled by the text of the statute. It's the only appropriate reading.
What about their mathematical argument?
Well, I think they're right in the sense that they're asking here for $244 million. If you spread that out over 10 times more hospitals, each of those hospitals will pay less than the hospital-specific rate hospitals will pay. So I think in that sense, it's correct. It's irrelevant because Congress has already provided a more generous base payment amount for the hospital-specific rate. What plaintiffs are asking for here is to, in perpetuity, continue to have an artificial increase in payments based on the change to the documentation and coding system that the Secretary implemented in fiscal year 2008. So their view is that the Secretary was required to impose an oversized adjustment on the standardized amount, which would put federal rate hospitals in the hole going forward, and put hospital-specific rates above where they would have been absent the change going forward into the future.
Same question for you.
Yes.
Why would Congress do it this way? Why would Congress clearly talk about mm-hmm. amount of estimated overpayments based on the whole hospital universe, and then clearly use language directed only to the federal rate?
Well, I think if you look at the, and we cite them in our brief, the Federal Register, the rulemakings throughout the 90s, CMS says they'd like to make this kind of change. They are uncertain if they can do so in a budget-neutral way. And what they talk about is the standardized amount. And I think that's because that's the majority of hospitals. So Congress responds to that in 2000 with D3A6. Which provides, the Secretary looks at the universe of hospitals, sees if there's been an increase in payments, or decrease, it could be either. In this case, of course, it was an increase, and then can adjust the standardized amount. And D3A6 is located, D3 itself is all about how to calculate the standardized amount from year to year. So it would be strange, in fact, if Congress had addressed the hospital specific rate in D3A6. So I think that's the history of how we find ourselves here today. But I think the idea that Congress...
But the provisions calculating the estimated overpayment are in the same section, right?
The provisions calculating the...
In other words, we're both finding an inflation and we're correcting it.
It's in the same
section that you say is corrected to the standardized amount.
That's correct. So my point was just that Congress has not addressed the hospital-specific rates at all. And so that is a question in this case. I think what plaintiffs have to do, though, is to show that D3A6 does address the hospital-specific rate, that Congress meant for the Secretary to adjust the standardized amount to make up for those rates as well, putting, as I said, federal rate hospitals in a worse position than they would have been, and putting hospital-specific hospitals in an even better position. So they want that $244 million, and because the standardized amount, that their base amount goes from year to year to year, that increase will just continue indefinitely. So they will continue to receive payments higher than they should be receiving. And that's really, I think, their argument here. If there are no further questions, we would ask the district court be affirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. The problem the government has here is that it's running away from the language of the statute. They simply don't want to confront the language of the statute, which is dispositive here in D3A6. The text is instructive. It requires the Secretary to adjust the standardized amount computed under this paragraph, that's D3, to eliminate, not to mitigate, but to eliminate the effect of such coding changes on changes in, quote, aggregate payments under this subsection. Not standardized amount payments calculated under this paragraph. In fact, the D36A distinguishes between this paragraph and this subsection, and it requires the Secretary to eliminate the effect of overpayments on in aggregate payments under this subsection. And the government doesn't dispute that both the aggregate payments under this subsection, which they never discuss, encompasses both sets of payments. And in fact, the section that the government relies upon for its authority to make its adjustment uses the same language, payments under this subsection. And the government's own brief says, well, we have the authority under D5 because it refers to payments under this subsection, that is subsection D, which is payments to both sets of hospitals. So they're using this very same language that they're running in under section D5, but they're running away from in subsection D3. But
the argument is, isn't it, that Congress passed D3, but it also knew there was D5, so that after making these adjustments for these coding changes, it left to the discretion of the Secretary to decide whether or not other adjustments were appropriate. I mean, Congress said nothing about 5 in 3, addressing one problem. And the district court offered a sort of interesting explanation as to why Congress acted the way it did.
My answer to the question, Your Honor, I'm out of time here.
Sure.
Your Honor, the answer is that Congress specifically required in that the exercise of authority under D5 precludes an exercise of authority under D3, because then you create the conflict, because the exercise of authority under D5 results in a reduction in the adjustment to the standardized amount that Congress mandated in Section D3. So Congress has mandated that the entire problem be resolved by an adjustment to aggregate payment to the standardized amount to resolve the problem of aggregate payments under this subsection. So we have a larger group that is a set of payments to two set of hospitals, and Congress has mandated that those overpayments be accounted for by adjustments to one set of hospitals. The language is unambiguous. And so for the Secretary to exercise that authority under D5 to make an adjustment to essentially discount the adjustment to the standardized rate hospitals under D3, and then to make the other adjustment to the rural hospitals, that creates a conflict because it reduces the adjustment that was made to the payments to hospitals paid according to the standardized amount. That conflict is what triggers application of the specific general canon. That canon is unambiguous for purposes of Chevron 1. That is, you don't need to go to Chevron 2 because you applied that canon. And because the statutory language is unambiguous, we would ask this court to reverse the district court's dismissal of the complaint and to enter summary judgment for the appellants and to remand.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll take the case under advisement.